Hey guys, I hope you're having a great day. Man, I can't believe that it's November already and that we are soon going to be heading into the holidays. But we know what the holidays mean for a pastor, right? They mean busy schedules. They mean extra meetings. They mean lots of times extra counseling appointments as well. And they mean that it's time, you know, to really think about our families. And I know I'm in a series on the weekend now called Fighting for Our Families. And I'll be talking this week about engaging with empathy. And part of the message, I'm going to talk about the last chapter of the Apostle Paul's life where he wrote. And it was just interesting because on one hand, he was just excited, you know, about the fact that he had fought the good fight. He'd finished the course and he kept the faith and he did all the things that God asked him to do. But then on the other hand, he was really reflective. And it was interesting to me that he wasn't even just thinking about the relationships that were dear to his heart. He was thinking about the pain. He was thinking about some of the abandonment that he experienced. So he didn't even just talk about Alexander, who did him great harm. And he said to Timothy, watch out for that dude. But he talked about Demas, who, you know, loved the world and forsook the call of God. And he talked about Crescens, who had, you know, helped him in prison and ministered to him. And now evidently he wasn't doing so good. And, you know, here's what I'm going to say today is it's really easy to end up like David was. When he was up on the rooftop and here he was fighting for Israel, fighting for the kingdom, caring about everything going on, but his own heart wasn't rooted in relationships the way that they should be. And if you're in that place, I think a lot of pastors have been there. And today we're going to have a very empathetic ear and a guy whose heart's really able to make us laugh a little bit. And to realize we can learn some things to make this just an incredible holiday season. So really looking forward to today. Dr. Brent Sharp, you've been a pastor. You've been a counselor for a long time now, huh?
Be with you today. I've been doing this a little bit. Pastoring for about 40 years and also had a private practice as a counselor for the same. And so... been a busy life, but a good life. Been a blessing.
Yeah. You know, I almost introduced you as a friend because I feel like in some ways we are friends, but I don't think we've ever had a meal together. I don't think we've ever talked. So I thought, well, I better not use the word friend, but probably a better way to say it is we have a lot of mutual friends.
And
And I came
respect you from a distance.
Yeah. So I've come to respect what you and your wife have done through mutual friends, also through talking to people who have been through things that you guys have helped them with, pastors, leaders, people that really have been grateful for the work that you guys have done in their life. I think the first time I heard about you was when I was getting ready to marry my wife, and they talked about this long list of questions that you had that help people deal with the compatibility issues. And I thought, well, will Tamara get talked out of marrying me? I don't know. But anyway, you guys have done so much good work. And today we're going to talk a little bit about why some marriages flourish and really why some of them just don't make it. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. The challenge, you know, and I think particularly with this group of leaders, as pastors and leaders in ministry, one of the challenges is that our life is lived so much outwardly that the needs will never go away. They're always going to be there. And it can just really pull us away from our families and towards that need. And because it's the church, it's the work of the ministry, it's the work of the church that, you know, surely working on my sermon or answering that phone call from a parishioner is more important than helping my son with their seventh grade algebra. And it just naturally draws us away from kind of the highest priority that we have. And so because it's exhausting, there's a lot that goes out. There's a lot of virtue that goes out in ministry work. You can oftentimes feel like nobody really understands. My spouse doesn't really understand. My kids don't understand. And can really put us in a pretty unhealthy place. And so there's some really key things that we found. How do we counter that? What are some ways that we can stay alive to that value of our marriage and our family and make them a priority? And so, you know, one of the things that all marriages deal with is we all start out with what we call a face-to-face relationship. You know, I've been married 44 years. Gosh, that means I'm just really old.
Man, that went quick, huh?
Yeah, that's really what I think.
I think, man, I blinked, and Tamara and I've been married 37 years. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. And so I met Janice at ORU actually 47 years ago now, sneaking up on that 50. And we all start out in those first few months of, again, face to face. It's you and me, baby, against the world. I'm smitten. We want to spend every spare minute we can with this person. I call it the unoffendable zone. It's almost impossible to offend each other during that time because there's so much good, positive nurturing that's going on. The challenge is that studies tell us that we all get about 18 months of that where it's easy. And then we turn side to side. And now we have jobs. We start a ministry. We start having babies. We got to go to soccer practice. We got to go to soccer practice. We got to do all of those kinds of things. And there's nothing evil about those, but the best of people, the best of relationships will slowly start disconnecting.
Yeah.
It's just a phenomenon that's going to happen. If we don't pay attention to that and have ways that we consistently move back towards each other to feed and care for the relationship, we're going to struggle.
Yeah, I'm not even sure Tamara had 18 months, if I'm just honest with you. I think that, man, when we got married, we hit the ground with our feet going. And, man, I can't wait to get into these things that you're going to share today. Before we do, I want to welcome new members to the network. We love welcoming them every 2 weeks on our webcast. Pastor Charles Lee Burris from Greater Morning Baptist Church in Springs, Louisiana. Pastor Kevin Campbell from Crossroads Baptist in Fern Park, Florida. Pastor Larray Glendening from Greater Life Community Church in Clive, Iowa. Pastor Ray Jennings, Real Life Ministries, Alvin, Texas. Adnan Masgood, CTN Houston. He's my friend. I had a good time with Adnan on Monday. Pastor Sherry Morrison Russell from Cross Church, Clinton Township, Michigan. Chuck Musselwhite, pastor of Village Chapel Church from Vanderburg Village, California, Pastor Alton Norwood Community Baptist Church, Lake Wales, Florida, and Pastor Shannon Oliver, Calvary Missionary Baptist Church in Houston, Pastor Steve Perry, Word Encounter Church, Detroit, Michigan, Pastor Park Robertson Flint Baptist Church in Flint, Texas, Pastor Kenny Tunstall, House of Grace in Magnum, Oklahoma, Pastor Chris Wallace, Ellsworth Church in Ellsworth, Michigan. And we love our international community. Pastor Clorivaldo Mariano from a church in Campinas, Brazil. And Pastor Gert Meyer from GMM Centurion in South Africa. So we're so grateful that all you guys are with us. And, you know, we're getting ready to do our Christian Leadership Weekend in a couple of weeks. And I'm going to be talking about the why of Christian leadership. My wife will be talking about the who of Christian leadership. And in her message, she's just going to talk about how, you know, the real power we have is what God's doing in our family and sharing that and reproducing that and why that's a qualification for ministry. Doesn't mean God disqualifies us because we have a struggle in our life, but it means, man, he cares deeply about helping us with our families. So I've been really looking forward to this. I want to remind guys, you can ask questions if you want to. I always stay in touch with my feed on here, and I see so many of you are on. That's awesome. So Brent, help us out. So I looked at your outline. You've got three things that I think are really, really tangible and insightful in terms of helping us.
Well, first of all, I think one of the keys is to recognize that whatever we water, whatever grass we water is going to be the greenest. And it's so easy to water the needs of people and those expectations and requirements of ministry and not water our spouse and our children. And so we found that healthy marriages have good, healthy habits that pull them back towards each other. Now, most of life will be lived side to side. I'm not suggesting that we're going to sit over candlelight dinners for 5 hours every night, staring into each other's eyes, dreaming about our next vacation. I mean, this is not real life. But if we don't have enough of these habits that pull us back towards each other, then we're going to struggle. And so I could talk for hours about these. There's lots of these practical things that can make a difference, but a couple of them that we found really helpful and that can really begin to make a difference almost overnight. One of them we call couch time is developing a time every evening. And usually this is an end of the day experience. Now, I tell people you don't have to be sitting on a couch necessarily, but you need to be sitting upright, because if we wait to go to bed to do this, somebody's going to fall asleep. But the idea is that we're just bringing our ships back together, and we are developing this time that says, you're the most important relationship in my life. You're the most important role in my life, above my ministry role, above me being a parent of our children. Of all those roles, this is the most important relationship. It's about a 10 to 15 minute experience. The consistency is the key here. And there's basically some real simple guidelines that we found that really make this important. Because I ask couples all the time, what are your evenings like? And they describe what their evenings are like. Well, we've got one over here with this kid to practice, and one's helping this one with homework, and you know, I've got a meeting at the church, and we're just missing each other. And we might even be in the same house, but one person's over here returning emails, the other one's over here doing this. And this is a moment that pulls us back together. And there's four basic guidelines. One of them is that we take turns. In most families, one person out talks the other one. We're simply just talking about our day. We're just saying, hey, this is what happened in my world while we were apart from each other today. My wife and I both work in our practice here. Our offices are next to each other. We're kind of around each other all day, but we don't have any idea what's going on with each other. And so we sit there. Now, the reason I say we have to take turns is talking is I could ask my wife, Janice, how her day was, and she could take the whole 15 minutes. I mean, she could tell me every little detail and nuance of the day. And she might ask me how my day was, and I go, it was fine. So I said three words and she talked for 15 minutes. I mean, this is not a good balance here. Okay. And sometimes I didn't want to talk about work. I wanted to leave it, but that's where I spent most of my life. And so she's like clueless with what's going on in most of my life. So I tell people, you don't have to keep an egg timer and go 7.5 minutes each, but making sure that you both share about what's going on in your day. The second guideline, you talked about empathy. One of the most important gifts we can give anybody is the gift of validation. It's recognizing that what it is that you're feeling is real to you, and I care about it. I have empathy for it. It doesn't mean I don't necessarily even have to agree with how you experience that situation.
Yeah, that's good.
Understand why you feel what you're feeling. I care that you feel that. And so the second one is no unsolicited advice. We do not generally communicate for somebody to give us advice. We're just listening. And now, particularly for the male brain, that's really hard because we have a fix-it brain. When my wife is in pain and she shares something with me, I want to fix it. But it's not what she's asking. And when I step in and try to fix it, I'm basically minimizing her experience. I'm saying, well, if you would just think the way I'm thinking, then you wouldn't even feel that. And it just discounts the other person. And so we just listen. Now, I tell people if they say, what do you think I should do about that? Those are the magic words where you actually get to say something. but otherwise, we just listen. The third guideline is we have total focus and attention towards our spouse. So we're sitting over here in a corner of the living room. There's no television on. Nobody's got phone out looking at emails. There's no laptop out. We're looking at each other. You are the most important human on the planet to me.
That's good.
And then the last one is we take their side. I take your side over every other person, every other relationship.
Wow.
That I'm on your side. This is the most important role and relationship I have in my life is between us.
That is so good. You know, I'm going to start, Brent, my talk off on, it's about 12 days away, and I was just working on it. But I don't know if you ever heard the story of Thomas Watson Sr., I think it's Watson, who was the president of IBM, and he helped them survive the Great Depression. But what he did was he continued to produce inventory that he stored in factories, didn't lay off any of his employees. And that was a really questionable approach, and people on his board of directors didn't all agree with it. So there was pressure on him for him to be let go. So he had the possibility of a big government contract, which was worth $1 million. Nowadays, it'd be like a $21 million contract. And he thought he had it, but the salesman didn't do a good job. In fact, he made some significant mistakes. And so when it was over, the salesman came to his office with an envelope in his hand, and he said, I know what this meant to the employees. I know what this meant to you personally. And he got ready to hand him his resignation. And he looked that employee in the eye and he said, why would I accept this? He said, I've got $1 million invested in your education right now. And of course, he survived as the CEO. The employees survived. The company survived. But I mean, that's what Jesus did with Peter, right? I mean, Peter didn't have he had a lot of bad experiences from the crucifixion until the church was launched. But Jesus just kept investing in them. And when you talk about that, what I hear you saying is that we love people who invest in us. We don't love people who judge us. We don't love people who try to fix us all the time. But we love people who genuinely care and who genuinely invest in us. And I think that's really the foundation, whether it's with our kids, whether it's with our staff, whether it's with our best friends. I'm not here to fix anybody. I'm just here to care for people, just keep on investing in them. And it's pretty amazing what happens whenever we do that as people. Of course, I wish I heard this webinar a long time ago. I learned a lot the hard way, more things than I wish I learned the hard way. But it is true that the grass isn't greener on the other side. The grass is really greenest where we water it, where we nurture it. And, you know, we marry somebody because we're in love with them. But if you're not handed lots of skills, it's easy to find yourself in a place where you feel like you're incompatible.
We're taught in our country, we're taught more how to drive a car than we are how to be married. We just are very limited in our abilities to do this. And the whole idea of, you know, just falling in love, we thought it was going to be magical. We thought this, you know, that initial chemistry would sustain us for 75 years. And all of a sudden we start bumping into stuff that it's just not quite so easy. And the challenge with ministry marriages is that it seems like that those that we minister to, that they seem appreciative. They give us positive feedback and so forth. And sometimes it causes us to take our partner, our children for granted because maybe they don't understand, you know, what it takes to do this kind of work in ministry and so forth. And so it can be, it can set us up for some, you know, ways that the marriage begins to slowly decline. And so this couch time strategy, though, again, healthy marriages have good, healthy habits. I always tell couples there's every day doesn't mean there's going to be some huge, significant thing that we share. But it's the consistency of doing it daily, where we come back together, even if the rest of the evening we're busy or we have to run back to a meeting or whatever. I found when couples can take these few moments and pull their lives back together, it makes such a huge difference.
Yeah. How many nights a week would you suggest to people? Like if Tamara and I have 7 nights a week, how is it every night?
These are the days that you're basically away from each other all day. I tell folks, if you're together all day on Sunday, you don't need to do this. Yeah. You know, Saturday. But when we've been away from each other for many hours, this is just regrouping. It's again, pulling us back together.
Yeah. Good. Good.
Yeah. Another habit, and I can talk, Pastor, you're going to have to.
No. I think you're doing good. I love it. Lack of watering. I was just thinking that, you know, really, when you marry a gal that has a heart for ministry, which I know you did, if I remember right, wasn't your wife like the chaplain for women at ORU?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, you married somebody with a heart for ministry. And that can become, that can make it even worse, right? Because if she's in it with you as a guy, sometimes we think, well, she's in it with me. She's feeling as thrilled about all this as I am. It's just not true. So
yeah, it's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
The blessing is that we have the same passion for this. But Janice and I have had to fight not being just ministry partners or business partners. We've had to fight for boyfriend, girlfriend. How do we keep this life of marriage alive and not, again, just be partners in the work? Now, the partners, it's a blessing. It's wonderful. I'm thrilled that we've had this opportunity to do it. But particularly, I think, for I'm worse at it than Janice is, that I can make that the highest priority, you know, and every conversation is around ministry. Every conversation is around some project we're working on. And that kind of leads to the next one, which is what I call a fully unplugged date night. I'm a big date night fan for couples. But I've also found that there's three different kinds of outcomes for date night. You know, one is we just went and did something. We went and had a meal together, and it was okay. You know, it was fine. Not great, not bad. And then there are those that it did not go well. We got into a conversation that went south, and we came home early. And then there are those where we just went and had a wonderful time together. And I don't think we have, particularly in ministry, we don't have the luxury of doing either one of the first two. We've got to squeeze all the juice out of the lemon when we have these moments together. And so, again, I have structure for everything because I've found that if you don't do it the right way, these things, they don't do what they've been designed to do. And so just because of time limitations, I won't go through all of them, but a couple of the key ones. Now, we do recommend that couples try to do this very consistently. You know, we encourage couples to get to at some point that they do this every week. And so we're talking about a 2 to 5 hour kind of an experience here, and try to do it real consistently. But one of the keys, particularly for marriage ministries, we say this to all couples, is the whole focus of this is for fun. What usually happens for busy lives is we've been busy all week. We've hardly had a chance to talk. We're going out together. We sit down at the restaurant, and it turns into a business meeting or a ministry meeting. Now we're talking about a ministry project. We're talking about one of our children or difficulty they're having in math class, or talking about a financial issue with the church, or we're talking about this, that, or the other. It'll kill it. It will just simply suck the life out of the experience. And so I tell couples, you're going to have to put a really strong boundary around this. My wife and I give each other permission to bust each other. If either one of us talks about something serious, we just go, can't talk about that.
Good, good.
Yeah. Got to talk about that later. Good. Now, Jen, now I'm the one that preaches this hard and strong, and I'm the one that usually blows it. Okay. But Janice is so funny. If I start talking about something serious, she just looks at me and she goes, I don't know what you're talking about. That's the Sharps. We're the Smiths. So I tell people, if you have to become different people for a few hours, we've got to unplug. We've got to disconnect from all of these responsibilities and all these other roles that we have and get back again as boyfriend, girlfriend. And I do have people say, what in the world do you talk about if you can't talk about that kind of stuff? I tell people, you got to figure that one out. I mean, we've got a list of 100 questions that we give to couples that are kind of discussion starters. You know, we tell them, hey, start reading a book together. You know, do it on your own during the week. But when you get together on your date night, talk about the book and what you're getting out of it, what's meaning to you. And there's ways to do this that are life-giving. So it's really important to keep a really important structure. This is not a time to resolve conflict. It's not the time to problem solve. It's not the time to talk about any of those serious issues. And then the next one is even more important than that guideline, because the number one killer of date nights is we decide to go do something, got the kids settled, we hop in the car, we start pulling out of the driveway, we look at each other and go, well, what do you want to do? where do you want to go? I don't know. I thought you had a plan. Well, I always have to come up with a plan. And here we are driving across town, getting irritable. Our blood sugar's dropping. We show up at a restaurant. It's got a 45-minute wait. It'll just kill it. It just, again, sucks the life out of it. So we simply have couples sit down and make a list of their top 10 date night ideas. And I tell them, don't worry about whether your partner really likes that or not, whether it's their favorite or not. If you would like to do it and do it together, put it down. And then once we have those lists, we have them alternate. Every other week, it is your responsibility to plan the experience.
Good.
But when you plan it, you don't pick off of your list, you go off of their list. And so Pastor Jim, my wife loves plays, you know, like everything from the Performing Arts Center downtown to community theater, never been on my list in 44 years of marriage. But she loves those. So I've taken her to a lot of those things because she loves those. There's certain kind of places that certain kind of restaurants she likes and this, that, and the other. Now it's fair because next week we might go to an action adventure movie and eat barbecue. Okay. Which is on my list. So I tell people the words will never come out of your mouth again. What do you want to do? Cause somebody owns it. Number two, it's fair because we get to do stuff that both of us like ultimately. And number three, we get this really nice benefit of giving and receiving. There's something about them planning something for you that is like they're giving you a gift. A few months ago, it was in the winter. My wife had planned something for me. And we went to a theater. I remember it was cold because it was one of those with reclining seats in it. And I looked over halfway through the movie. Now, she had planned this for me. I looked over halfway through the movie and she had her coat pulled up over her. And underneath the coat, she was playing solitaire. And I leaned over and I said, now some people think I'm saying this sarcastically. I'm not. I leaned over and said, I feel so loved right now. Because I knew she picked it for me.
Yeah.
It was not her kind of movie, you know, and that was okay. She planned it for me. We went to a restaurant that was my favorite. This is what keeps boyfriend, girlfriend alive in our journey. And, you know, we're talking 2 to 5 hours a week. That's about 1 to 2% of your week.
Wow.
We have 168 hours in our week. 2 to 5 hours is about 1 to 2% of our week. And I'm amazed at how many couples cannot pull this off. Their life is so busy. They've packed it full with so many things where their energy has to go outward to all of these responsibilities. And again, we in the ministry, this is most difficult for us because there's so many good things that we could be giving our life to, that we just simply neglect these moments that pull us back, joining our lives together with this one special person in our life.
Yeah, that's so good. So good. Well, I want to encourage you guys that you may be saying, well, I'm going to get to it, but man, I got to fix this first. I got to get the church stabilized. And we have a good webinar on the website in our ministry warehouse, and it's just on life planning skills, because the truth is it's never going to happen. Trust me, I've been pastoring the same church for 33 plus years. And there's never a season. And just about when you think you have it all together, it's like raising a 2-year-old. Somebody's going to do something to cause it all to go different directions again. So you do have to be able to laugh and you have to be able to love. And if you don't have that, I mean, a lot of people like A.W. Tozer, but I've been reading books by guys who they pastored during the Second Great Awakening. And I'm trying to read their sermons from the end of that Great Awakening to learn how to pastor better in a post-Christian America. What are the things I need to be thinking about? And when I read Tozer, who was one of those guys, it was so sad that when he died by himself, because he had a father who was a farmer, who didn't really build an intimate relationship with his wife. And Tozer just kind of reproduced that, a godly man. But his wife ended up remarrying one of the leaders in the church after he died. And she said A.W. Tozer knew how to walk with God. She said the second guy knew how to love me. We had more of a marriage. And we don't want that said about ourselves, man. We want to, because we're cheating ourselves in the end too, right? We're cheating ourselves, our wives, our families. So, man, this is good stuff. I'm going to just summarize it because I know some of you guys are like me. You like to fill in the blanks, right? So feelings are going to follow behavior. So if feelings aren't good, we don't try to feel our way into actions. We act our way into new feelings. And then healthy marriages have good, healthy habits. And we can start with couch time every night. I know I've got a friend, Rob Koch, and Laura do cheese and crackers and different things, you know, every night. I think that was great. I mean, they've endured a lot. Lost a son at 17 years old. One of the toughest things I think I ever walked into as a friend was helping a friend through that time. And then a date night every single week, and things can get moving in the right direction. So then that's just the first one. You've got two more, so I'm going to shut up and let you talk.
Well, just to make a point on that, you know, what you're saying is so right. You know, I've never heard any significant season minister or leader, whether it's Billy Graham or Oral Roberts or other leaders, ever say at the end of their life, gosh, I wish I had done one more crusade, or I wish I had done one more ministry project and spent less time with my wife and children. I've never heard anybody say that, you know. And so we all have an opportunity to turn the ship here and make a difference that we can do ministry life and family life and thrive in both of those. And I tell people that if their feelings aren't very strong in their relationship, it simply does mean that they've got to go look at their behavior. What are we neglecting? What have we not been watering? And if you can water long enough, then the grass will green up. And feelings do come alive again. And I do believe God wants us to thrive and to enjoy the journey. And so the second thing that we see is so important is that causes ministry individuals to struggle and then their marriages and family life to struggle is just a lack of self-care. Is, you know, ministry is like, you're a pitcher that's being poured out. And, you know, I've been a pastor for 40 years and a marriage counselor for 40 years, had a practice as well. And in neither one of those settings could I ever expect that my parishioners or that my clients would be thinking about me and how to take care of me. That's not the role that we have. We are a pitcher that's being poured out. If we don't know how to get that pitcher filled up, take responsibility and ownership ourselves to be able to fill our pitcher up, we are going to burn out. And I think one of the false narratives that we have, a misunderstanding of ministry, is that we're just to literally lay our life down and sacrifice everything. But I hear the scripture that talks about love your neighbor as you love yourself. It's easy in ministry to be so focused on loving neighbor that we don't love self properly. Now, there are some people in the world that love self way more than their neighbor, obviously. But the other can be out of balance as well. I believe they need to be in a fine, healthy balance. And so what are ways that we can take care of ourselves so that we have something to give? And one of the reasons that I think that we don't have energy to give to our families is because the church life takes everything. We've allowed it to, and we don't have good boundaries. And so I encourage, you know, most leaders have kind of personality temperaments where they're just always driving and achieving the next thing and what's the next project and so forth. And if they don't have a planned Sabbath rest that is locked into their schedule. Now, I know I'm not talking this, you know, about a literal Friday night to Saturday night, literal Sabbath, you know, Old Testament 24-hour, but but we have moments throughout the week that are structured, that are rest, are opportunities of refreshing and replenishing, so that my attitude with my children, my attitude with my spouse can be positive, and I have something to give because I'm replenished.
Yeah.
And so I encourage people to take, you know, even if you start with a couple hours some morning where you get away from the office, or take a whole morning or afternoon, or that could grow. You know, I have some that I've talked to, some leaders and pastors that I've talked to enough about this, that they've gotten real serious about it. And they do it like a 24-hour period. It's amazing. I didn't know they could even do that, you know, and their staff knows it. And we leave pastor alone. And it, you know, I think sometimes there's also a little bit of a misunderstanding of what rest is. Rest is going to be different for everybody. It's whatever's replenishing. You know, I know that the Old Testament law was that if I picked up a glass of water and carried it to the other side of the room, that is work, you know. And so, you know, I think about, gosh, what must they have done? They were just like sitting on the porch looking at butterflies, I guess, you know. And so I don't think it has to be that way. I think for some people, certain kind of activities, I like working with my hands. I do kind of remodeling work in our home and our office buildings. It's very refreshing to me. Now, I'm physically tired, but it is very therapeutic to me. I always tell people that everything else I do, people are never done. You know, they're always still in process. But if I remodel a bathroom, it's like done. Yeah. It's finished. You know? It's a beautiful feeling, you know. And so that actually is part of my Sabbath rest, is I have some hours each week that I do, I kind of work with my hands and I do things like that. And so it's finding what it is that's life-giving for you. You know, for some it would be going, just burying their nose in a book and being by themselves, but maybe not necessarily a book that I'm going to preach on, you know, Sunday, but a, you know, something that's kind of is distracting for me, or you know, that it's fun for me, that I can't wait to get back to the plot or something. And really learning how to do self-care is really critical. Because one of the factors in this is that we're all going to be dealing with a certain amount of loss in life. And as pastors, we're dealing with people all the time that are dealing with loss. They're grieving. And grieving is not just death. Somebody died. Most of grieving that we deal with in life is the loss of an ideal,
wow,
or the loss of loss of a dream. But I thought life was going to look like this.
Wow.
And life now looks like this. It's down here someplace because my teenage son is struggling and has kind of gone off the radar. And that's a death. That's the death of a dream. Or we're struggling in our marriage, or you know, the church since COVID has dropped off and has not regained its strength financially or whatever. We're grieving all the time, and my world as a counselor, some experts suggest that we're all grieving something all the time, and one of the keys to grieving well. Billy Graham later in his life is quoted saying, Americans have no clue how to grieve. We don't leave space for it. We're supposed to all just always be full of faith and believe in everything's going to work out fine. And so we don't even give people room for sadness, for tears, even go through times of discouragement, or even to feel anger. And one of these reasons why self-care practices, healthy self-care practices are so important, is that that is one of the ways that we deal with discouragement in our life. We're going to have circumstances in life that are going to be discouraging. You know, the scripture says in this life, we will have trouble. There's going to be difficulties we're going to face. But if we have these practices of good Sabbath rest and having certain outlets of things that bring joy to our life, which is kind of a second strategy here, I encourage people to make a list of what we call a pleasant events inventory. I have them go back in their life. You might have to go back to college or, you know, earlier in your life and think of things, you know, what are things that I used to do that I really enjoyed, that were fun, that I really looked forward to. Because again, ministry kind of just take everything out of you. It just, it kind of demands all of you, all of the time.
And
if we're not careful, we can let ourselves just totally get poured out.
Yeah, what I like that you're doing today is this is so helpful because you're giving me steps I can take. You're identifying the big issue, and then you're giving me steps I can take. And I know for me that I have a personality that a lot of the joy I find is in winning, you know, and it's not, I don't have to win every game. That's not what I'm saying. I just, I love progress. I love seeing things happen. You know, my biggest passions really are church and the unreached parts of the world. So I live for every day is my church, helping other pastors, seeing churches thrive in places where they don't exist right now. I mean, that's what I do. I'm grateful that I grew up in a good family. I'm a first generation Christ follower. I was raised in a Catholic family, but my parents were really good parents. And when I started pastoring, to be honest with you, our church went from 200 to 400 the first year, and I was ready to quit. And when I talked to Tamara's dad about it, and he said, well, Jim, why do you want to quit? I said, because I don't feel like I can be the kind of dad to my kids that my dad was to me. And I said, I don't think I want to do this for the rest of my life. And he gave me good advice. He looked and he said, well, why don't you just go back and do it right? See who leaves and see who stays. That was really great advice. And so I took his advice and we came back and tried to do that. But it's still work. It's a lot of work. And Tamara and I take a 24-hour Sabbath. We start Sunday night, and like you said, they all look different. That's a family night for us. Once a month, we have everybody in. We celebrate the birthdays that month, whether it's children, in-laws, grandchildren, and we spend, you know, the night together. And then the other times, we just go out with one couple, you know, or one child, and we just kind of focus on family. We shut down our Sunday night service. Some of you remember when we had Sunday nights. Most people don't even have Wednesday nights anymore, let alone Sunday nights. But we shut it down and just looked at the people when there was a good crowd. And we said, but you know, we're all so busy. We don't have time for our family. So let's just shut this service down and let's all make it a family night. And it was such a great idea. So we do that. The other thing we do that helps us is I work 6 days a week, and I work hard like lots of you guys, but once a month I don't. We take an extra day, and that means we can just go out of town. We can do whatever we want to do. And so once a month, I don't work 6 days a week. I work 5 days a week, and we just pretend we're teenagers again. You know, we pretend we're in our early 20s, and we try to recapture the reasons that we got married. So it works. I'll be honest with you. I'm getting some help here, and I'm saying, okay, even if you're doing stuff, are you doing some of the stuff as well as you need to do? So if you're repenting, I'm out there with you. All right. Well, what's our third one?
Well, life is never about perfection. It's always about just making progress, right? So if we can tweak things along the way, and I so appreciate your story there. It's such good leadership, you know, to shut down a service and change the whole climate and of your church from that. And that's awesome. And so the last one is, you know, whatever we focus on determines our attitude. It is easy to lose focus if we're not careful. And what I mean by this, in ministry life, we get so much benefit. We get so much ego strokes from accomplishing some ministry task, from a well, you know, shared sermon and nice feedback. There's so much really wonderful benefit, you know, that we get from that. And doing the consistent work of parenting and being a marriage partner oftentimes doesn't give the same ego stroke, you know, to us. And so we can lose focus of what it is that we appreciate about our spouse, about our children. And if we're not careful, we can begin to latch on to those things that we don't like so much, that are negative. Now, this is true in everything. It's true in a job. It's true when people come to our church and say, gosh, I don't know why it took me so long to find you. How, you know, we love this and this is amazing. And inside I'm like, well, just wait. There'll be some stuff that you don't like, you'll be thinking, well, my old church did this, and we like, it just can happen. And it leads us all. We are all susceptible to what Janice and I have coined the 90-10 lie. And this developed out of our work with couples, but it just is so pervasive in so many parts of our life. We remember, again, when we were smitten, when we first met 47 years ago, and we thought, oh, my gosh, I found the one. I found everything I was looking for. Well, there's no human that could ever be 100% of everything you're looking for in a spouse. God wouldn't even allow that, because that would lead to idolatry. We'd be like worshiping this person. The reality is we all marry somebody that's about 80 to 90% of what we would love to have in a spouse. Now, as a marriage counselor, I help people go from 75 to 80 to 82 to 85 to 87. But it's never going to be 100%. It's never intended to be 100%. But the challenge with that is that leaves 10 to 15% of what I wish I had in a spouse, they don't have. And yet there are going to be other people in the world that do have those qualities. And that leaves us vulnerable and susceptible. Now, I do a lot of my practice is affair recovery among Christians and leaders. And so this is really an obvious issue for them, but it really affects all of us. On the lower end of the continuum, it just affects our attitude. We don't really say anything. It's just, God, I wish they were a little bit more like this person. I wish they, whatever it is, the way they cook, the way they, how much they go to the gym and work out, whatever. but I don't really say anything, but it just affects my attitude. We go up the continuum a little bit more, and I might say something verbally critical, and it begins to break down and be a poison in the relationship. And then we go up to the other end of the continuum, which is what I deal with so much of, is that people believe that, oh my gosh, I have to have that. I cannot live without that 10%. And they actually go after it. But what we find over and over again, that even when they go after it and they got out there and they got the 10%, all of a sudden now it's, oh my gosh, I got the 10%, but this person's never going to be the 80% or the 85% or the 90%, because it's a misfocus, a misunderstanding. Because the challenge is, even though it's only 10%, if I don't have it, it feels like 50%. It feels like 70%. It feels way much larger than that. I have two brothers, and my mom knew when we came home from school, we were always going to be hungry. And so she'd say, boys, go get a snack in the refrigerator. But she had always baked some cookies or something and laid them on the counter. And she said, but don't touch the cookies. I could have the whole refrigerator, but all I could think about was the cookies. There's something about where our brain goes as we focus on those things that we can't have, with those things that are even negative in our children or in our staff or in our partner. And so it's, if we just need to recognize that this is a phenomenon, and how do we keep balancing against that? And so one of the ways that we encourage people to be proactive with this, because again, whatever we focus on determines our attitude. And so I have people make a list, and we give a little handout that has a bunch of adjectives in it. And I have them go through and circle all of these qualities that you believe your partner possesses. But you can just come up with these characteristics on your own. And I have them make a list of 10 of these. For my wife, she's one of the brightest people in the room. She's really smart. She's funny. She's creative. She's spontaneous. She loves beauty. These are all the real qualities that I love in her. But we can lose focus, because one of the other phenomenons is the very thing we're attracted to is, there's a part of that thing that is the thing that will actually drive us crazy at some point. I was attracted to the fact that my wife was spontaneous and liked a lot of change and new adventures. That can get a little bit much sometimes. She was attracted to the fact that I'm pretty steady. I don't change that much. But that can get kind of boring, you know? And our human brain kind of latches on the part that they're not. And if we don't purposely keep reminding ourselves, this is who they are. This is how they reflect the nature of God in the world. And so and that's what I think happens when we make this list. And I have people take 30 days, and every single day for that 30 days, pray through that list with a thankful heart. The way I do that is, Lord, thank you for James. Thank you for how bright and witty and fun-loving and creative, and she's spontaneous and she loves beauty. You'll have this memorized by the end of 30 days. It's reminding you that this is who they are. This is the reflection of God, of how they were created to be and how they reflect him in the world. And then during that 30 days and beyond, just get into the practice of verbally affirming them. Every time you see them display one of those qualities, tell them. So often we think they know we love them, but do they? Have we really been communicating that in a very specific way, in the very particular ways that we see it in them? And every time then you communicate that to them, you're again reminding yourself, this is who they are, and you're actually speaking life to them. It's like you're giving them a super-duper vitamin B12 shot, you know? One of the ways I think God designed marriage, one of the purposes, I believe, for marriage was that he would have a mouthpiece, that he would be able to step in to our skin, so to speak, and be a mouthpiece to verbally speak life to our partner. Yeah. And we're that vessel. We can use our words for good and life and encouragement, because most of our spouses, by the time, and ourselves, by the time we hit the sink in the morning, brushing our teeth, something's come against us and told us what we're not enough of.
Yeah.
But I believe he wants that consistent communication of, this is who you are. You are deeply loved. I see these values in you. And again, we can use it for good and it be life-giving, or we can use it for damage and harm. Yeah. It really comes down to our choice.
Man, that is so good. And, you know, I just want to say to guys that, you know, we're in the same age bracket, and I've seen people who've lost their churches. I've sat with people who've gone through church splits. Man, it's painful. But I've been with close friends who lost their families, and man, that's even more painful. And we might not be able to give as much time to this every single week as we do our profession, but I hope it's a higher priority than our profession, because it's going to play out in such a huge way. And what help, you know, lack of watering, how to nurture it, how to really help it thrive, and then a lack of self-care, you know, just making sure that we have everything in our schedule to make sure that we're giving our best to our marriage. We're not giving our leftover energy to our marriage and to our family, which is so common. We all know that in ministry. And then focus. And I was thinking when he shared just about how that's really the foundation of temptation, right? I mean, Adam and Eve are in the garden, and there's all these trees and there's all this pleasure to enjoy, but there's this one tree, right? And I can't have one tree. And next thing you know, paradise gets invaded with pain because somebody gives into temptation. And that story plays out over and over and over again, and has played out in our lives. Thank God we have an amazing Redeemer in Jesus, who wherever we start, he always has the keys to help us unlock abundant life. So that's a good thing. Hey, I just want to say that you've just recently stopped the pastoring side, and now you're full-time on the counseling side, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of having two full-time jobs, you have one.
I just have one full-time job now, we're doing a little bit more traveling. We enjoy doing some marriage seminar kind of work with churches. So anyway, I feel like I have margin in my life for the first time in my life. And so, I probably needed counseling a long time ago.
Oh, man. Well, I was so thrilled to hear that, honestly, because I was going to tell these guys that if COVID did anything, it opened us up to the power of Zoom meetings and using technology more. So we actually have couples work with you guys, and I know you only have so much time, and I'm always blessed when you make time for couples who matter to us, and we know that you guys are going to give them such good care. And then I'm glad to hear you guys are traveling and doing that as well, because you have sown a lot into a lot of people, and I'm sure God's going to make these amazing years for you guys. So thank you. First of all, thank you for making time today. It's just such a blessing. And would you pray for the guys before we close the close our time together?
Absolutely. Lord, we're thankful that when you call us, you understand what you're doing. You understand that we're limited humans, that we are dependent creatures on you. And yet you have a way that when we lay our life out to you and when we allow you to put it in proper balance and perspective, that we really can thrive in this journey, that you're not using us in a way that is harmful, but you're working through us in a way that's life-giving to others and life-giving to our families and even to ourselves. And so I just pray for all of these that are has shared these moments together. Lord, you know exactly what each one of them are going through. You know their individual circumstances. I pray they might have grabbed a hold of one or two thoughts here that they could maybe begin to implement, that could begin to bring life and strength to them in a greater way. And we just trust you to wrap your arms around them, that they each of them would know that you see them, that you know exactly what is happening with them, and you care deeply for them. And we just trust your love to flow in and through them, and as they prioritize their own marriages and family life, that will actually strengthen and nourish their ministries as well. We trust you for that. In Jesus' name.
Amen. Amen. Well, guys, it was great to be together. In 2 weeks, we'll have Mark Harrell. And I think Mark was the first one that we ever shared the significant church vision with, he and Jeanette. And we went to Steamboat Springs, and we went out in the cold and rode some snowmobiles and just about froze to death, but we had a good time and started talking about pastors, especially in smaller places and smaller counties. And man, I can't wait to be with Mark, because we talked today about our families, but in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about our staff, because it's important our heart turns towards our staff during this season as well. And then we're going to talk about other pastors and how God can use us. And we think, well, I'm so busy, man. I'm just lost in my own church. But the truth is, when we give, we receive. And I know a lot of us, you know, we want to be a healthy pastor with a healthy team around us. And we really want our city and our nation filled with healthy churches. So I can't wait to talk to Mark, who has pastored again for years and years. And then in 2 weeks after that, we're going to have Daniel Grothy with us. And Daniel wrote a book called The Power of Place. And I love that book, because he talks about all the instability there is in our world. And he talks about the things that we can help our church understand that'll cause them to live rooted lives, stable lives, really fruitful lives. So I hope you guys will be looking forward to those 2 weeks with me. And Daniel's going to be with us at our annual conference in Austin this year. You can check out everything about it on our significantchurch.com website. But again, Brent, thank you so much for being with us. Such a blessing. And guys, have a great weekend.